There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesmandel, and I'm your host. On today's program, where's the public interest in digital TV? And how is local media doing, especially in this age of consolidated ownership? It's going to be a big news wrap-up here to catch up on many of the things that have happened in and around our media environment in the last few weeks. You will want to stay tuned. So every few weeks I like to take a look at what's going on, take a bigger survey of what's going on with regard to our media environment, look at the news of what's going on in Washington, what's sometimes going on in the rest of the world that affects our ability to communicate and to receive good quality communications, whether it's news, whether it's entertainment, cultural programming, by all forms of media. I think it's really important for us to keep track of these things because in many cases there's lots that we as individuals and as citizens can do, whether it's working with our congresspeople or taking advantage of opportunities to communicate and get better information. We're at a really interesting point here in 2007 where there's this resurgence of interest in media and really the rules and the laws and the institutions that produce and help us get information. The internet's been a big part of that, as has been the growth of a really strong, revitalized public interest sector, groups like Free Press, or groups like Public Knowledge and the Consumers Union, all working very hard to try and make sure that the interests of the public, the interests of democracy, of an informed public, continue to ring loud and true, even as profits and consolidation accelerate as the profit motive takes over for other motives. So that's why I bring it to you here at Media Geek, even though a lot of what the program is about is trying to give incentive, to give inspiration, and let you know more about the people who actually go out and make independent media, because that has been a strong, vibrant information source throughout the history of the United States, and really ever since the very first printing presses. And that's why I do it. So let's go and check out what's going on. So on February 18th, 2009, all the nation's broadcast television signals will go digital. The changeover has been a long time coming, nearly 12 years. But a coalition of 28 groups says that over this time, the FCC, quote, has repeatedly failed to redefine broadcasters' public interest obligations in light of the nation's ongoing transition to digital television, end quote. The coalition made these comments in their filing as part of the FCC's third periodic review of digital television conversion. The FCC has proposed procedures and rule changes that will be necessary to complete this conversion, but the coalition says the commission still has left out anything that addresses, quote, broadcasters' obligations to serve local communities' educational, informational, civic, minority, disability, and emergency information needs, end quote. The coalition notes that broadcasters stand to reap significant financial benefits from the digital transition due to their new abilities to broadcast multiple channels of programming in what used to be just one channel of space and their ability to offer new digital services. Therefore, the coalition reasons, the public ought to benefit from the new technologies as well. According to Charles Benton of coalition member Benton Foundation, quote, Congress and the courts have been clear that the rights of viewers are paramount in broadcasting. The FCC has worked long and hard to help broadcasters make the transition to digital TV technology, a transition that could greatly increase the value of their businesses. The commission must now do the work to define the benefits of the transition for the public, a transition that could make their airwaves more valuable to them, end quote. Democratic FCC Commissioner Michael Copps agrees. In a separate statement, Copps writes, quote, broadcasters will be able to air up to half a dozen different digital program streams, so here is a wonderful chance for them to get away from all the homogenized, nationalized programming that big media has foisted on us in favor of covering the people and communities they actually serve. Digital technology can be a huge boon for all of us, but only if we make sure this spectrum serves the public interest, end quote. Although you don't hear much about it in the news, the FCC is still in the middle of a big review of media ownership rules. On September 20th, the commission will be in Chicago, holding another public hearing on that issue. At previous hearings in Los Angeles, Nashville, Harrisburg, PA, and Tampa, Florida, commissioners got an earful about the declining quality of local media. It's pretty likely they'll hear more of the same in Chicago. A recent study conducted by the Media Management Center at Northwestern University actually provides some insight on the quality of the Windy City's local TV news. Amongst that study's findings, less than half of every local news program is devoted to news stories. Sports and weather each take up 9-10% of the newscast, and commercials take up almost 30% of the time. More than one-third of all news stories are about crimes, fires, and accidents, while political coverage accounts for 15%. Although stories are geographically local, most news coverage has no direct effect on the lives of people in the viewing area. For every non-white person who is heard in a story, there are 3 white people. Women are outnumbered 2-1 in the news, and finally, people who are white, male, and official dominate political coverage. You can look to the Media Geek website for more information on when and where the Chicago public hearing will be held on media ownership. And as I reported last week, the FCC released a series of research studies on media ownership. You can read them for yourself. I think that's important. Don't just listen to me and don't just listen to the critics. Go and give them a gander. Anyone should be able to read that stuff. There's links to those studies at MediaGeek.net. And speaking of local media, a new Harvard study finds that the websites for newspapers in small and medium-sized cities are losing ground against sites belonging to nationally known newspapers like the New York Times and the Washington Post. The big papers have seen traffic increase by an average of 10% in the last year, while the smaller newspapers have lost audience in the same period. The websites for local commercial radio and TV stations gained a little bit of audience, but at a lower pace than the so-called big brand name networks like CNN, ABC, and Fox. The biggest gains in audience occurred among the newer non-traditional news sites like Yahoo, Google, Topics.net, and Dig.com, although these sites tend to be news search engines, aggregators, and blogs rather than creators of original reporting. While local newspapers have lost audience, the study's authors also argue that these smaller players should be able to benefit from the popularity of sites like Google News. Newspapers are still creating the original reporting that feeds these sites. The authors also point out that papers often aren't taking advantage of this very fact that they're feeding this original content by not even featuring their local news stories on their front pages. This report was prepared by Thomas E. Patterson, Bradley Professor of Government and the Press at Harvard's John F. Kennedy School of Government. And you can look at it online at www.shorensteincenter.org. And the reason why I pulled this particular story out and have it follow the story regarding the media ownership rules review and hearing is because one of the biggest arguments used by the FCC back in 2003 when it attempted to greatly loosen media ownership rules, including allowing a TV station and newspaper to be co-owned along with a bunch of radio stations in a given market, they said that the internet brings new competition. They said the internet brings lots more diversity. So we don't have to worry so much about diversity and ownership in local markets. It's okay if your TV station, which provides most of the local news, also owns the local newspaper, which provides most of the local news, and a bunch of radio stations, which provide a little bit of local news, because people can turn to the internet. But I think at this stage in 2007, what we're finding is that when you're still looking at local news, especially for smaller or mid-sized cities, there's less of it there, and there's less diversity. As noted in that study from Harvard, local TV stations are getting a little bit of audience, and they certainly carry some very brief news stories. If you look at most local TV stations, they do not have stories even remotely close to the length of what you would see in a local newspaper. And yet that's usually the result of some consolidated ownership, and the news that dominates still is national news that's generated by the big networks. What you're not seeing so much is truly local news sites that are divorced from either your local newspaper or your local TV station. So if that consolidated ownership were allowed to go through, which is something that could happen in the current rules review, then you would see basically the same stories, maybe dressed up in different fashion, on your local newspaper site and your local TV station site, really resulting in a net loss of diversity, not a net gain, because other news sources are not necessarily coming in to pick up the slack. And that's not, in my opinion, spitting in the eye of blogs or spitting in the eye of other ways that people get news, or even indie media, which in many cities around the world has tried to fill in the gap in local news. But what it's a recognition of is that reporting and original news reporting can still be an expensive enterprise, where in order to go out and really hit the pavement and make the calls and gather together a good originally reported story that might actually represent a few points of view, especially if those points of view are not those typically represented in the mainstream news stories, requires a lot of time and effort, and often may be required that someone either have a lot of leisure time or volunteer time or be paid for their efforts. And those resources have not necessarily increased in the internet age. So while there may be a lot more commentary and opinion, and with blogs a lot more commentary and opinion that rests on local news reporting, there doesn't necessarily seem to be a lot more local news reporting, especially in smaller communities, whereas you may see more of it in places like New York or Chicago, where you just simply have more people doing it. And so I think it's up to us to think critically about what the internet does and does not provide at this time, and why it does or does not provide that at this time. So for all the talk of the democratic power and the democratizing power of the internet, which frankly, personally, I still believe in, we're still seeing great domination by these same media giants. And for the new media giants, such as Yahoo and Google, they're still relying really on the old media giants to provide a lot of the information that comes through. So if you go to Google News, what you're still seeing funneled through are AP Wire stories or the New York Times and others. Although, because it is a search engine, the ability to get at maybe some smaller sources still exists, even if it's not really what a lot of us would like. You just need to look at it all very critically and keep track of what is really happening and see where are people really going. Because if you get your internet through AOL or through some other major broadband companies, you may still use their homepage, which is going to be dominated by Time Warner, the New York Times, Washington Post Company, and on and on and on. That's just a little bit of interjection and editorial from me. I'm Paul Riesmanel, host here of Media Geek. You can check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net. The radio program is at radio.MediaGeek.net, where you can subscribe to the podcast to get it automatically downloaded to your computer or MP3 player every single week, or you can just choose to go back and listen selectively. Maybe you missed something, or maybe you just want to hear it again. All at MediaGeek.net. If you have any comments about the program, any story ideas to offer, something you know about that you think other people ought to know about, something you'd like to share, I'd love to hear from you. Send me your comments, Paul@MediaGeek.net. Well, arguably, one of the biggest boosts to local media diversity enacted in the last decade is low-power FM community radio. Although small and very grassroots, it nevertheless was specifically created to allow local community groups to get on the air easily and inexpensively. Hundreds of new stations have gone on the air in the last few years in small and mid-sized cities. However, the full potential of this service was stunted from the start by Congress back in 2000, when a last-minute rider to a budget bill put significant constraints on the placement of stations on the dial, keeping stations out of the nation's larger urban markets and limiting the number of low-power stations that could be built elsewhere. This action was taken in response to intense lobbying from the National Association of Broadcasters, which claimed that 10 and 100-watt stations posed a horrible interference threat to stations broadcasting with thousands, tens of thousands, up to 100,000 watts. And Congress bought the NAB's line, despite the fact that the FCC's own engineers found no evidence to support such interference claims. And then a couple of years ago, a study mandated by Congress in that same move, produced by the MITRE Corporation, which does a lot of engineering studies for the federal government, found, again, the FCC was correct, and low-power FM poses no interference threat to large full-power stations. Now, after several attempts over the last 7 years to reverse that damage, another bill to restore low-power FM is gaining steam in Congress. The Local Community Radio Act of 2007, introduced in July by Congressman Mike Doyle and Lee Terry, has racked up 21 co-sponsors in the House. And actually, one of those co-sponsors is Republican Tim Johnson, who represents the 15th District of Illinois, here where Media Geek is produced. So if that's something you think is a good thing and you're one of Mr. Johnson's constituents, you might drop him a line or give a call to his local office and say thanks. It's nice occasionally when our congresspeople do something good for communities. And if you, perhaps your own local congressperson has also signed on, you can also call and say thanks. A similar bill was introduced into the Senate by John McCain and Maria Cantwell. Both bills have now been referred to committee, but could still use lots of support from people who would like to see hundreds more low-power community radio stations go on the air. And more co-signers to the bill helps move them along. The Prometheus Radio Project has been leading the fight to restore low-power radio, along with groups like Common Cause and Free Press. More information and easy forms to help you send messages on the matter to your congressional representatives are available at prometheusradio.org. That's PrometheusRadio.org. And Media Geek, aside from home station WEFT here in Champaign-Urbana, is primarily carried on low-power stations throughout North America. It's great that there's so many more community stations on the dial, but there could be even more. More grassroots and community media, I think, can only be a good thing. And this is Media Geek, and I'll be back with a little bit more about how AM stations now want to make an incursion into the FM dial in just a moment. Stay tuned.
Secretary Rice, Condi, it's time for the truth.
I want to help all of you understand how the United States conducts its war against terrorism.
Tell them about extraordinary rendition.
No joy.
CIA assassins and secret police. Tell them about war and misery and torture.
Prime Minister Howard was out this morning saying that this is the right thing to do.
No, no. Tell them, Tony.
This is wrong in its ideas, it's wrong in its ideology, it's wrong in every single wretched reactionary thing about it.
For decades, the United States and other countries have used torture against those we consider to be unlawful combatants. No joy. Torture is a vital tool in combating transnational terrorism.
It's beyond all the bounds of civilized behavior.
The United States transports detainees from one country to another for the purpose of interrogation using torture.
In Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, Egypt, Poland, Romania.
The United States has used ruthless conduct.
And in fact, we got nowhere. It didn't work.
Acts of physical or mental abuse often occur when questioning of detainees is conducted . Indeed, It is the policy of the United States that this questioning is to be conducted outside U.S. law and treaty obligations using torture.
Condi. Thank you.
George W. making a few confessions there. That's a truthful translation, which are become so profligate now, not just the domain of negative land and people with reel-to-reel tape recorders and razor blades for the editing. You can get more of those at DIYmedia.net. My friend John Anderson has a huge archive of media collage that finds politicians inadvertently speaking the truth. That one particular one was called Rendering Babylon by The Rogue Sounds, and this is Media Geek. So, I mentioned just before that there is a possibility that AM stations are going to try to make an incursion into the FM dial. And what this relates is that the FCC is taking up a proposal made by the National Association of Broadcasters to allow AM radio stations to obtain small, low-power transmitters operating on the FM dial. Now, these types of stations, which you've heard about before on the Media Geek show, is called an FM translator. And an FM translator is a small, low-power station whose specific purpose is to rebroadcast the signal of another station. Now, when we talk about commercial stations, a commercial FM station may have translators, except that those translators can only exist within the signal area of where a full-power station ought to have coverage. And so what we're primarily talking about is cases like mountains or other geographic features which make it difficult for a regular full-power FM station to fill in its full coverage area. In that case, a station can be allowed to have a small low-power station in maybe another city rebroadcast its signal. If it's a non-commercial station that is the full-power station, they're actually allowed to have those translators anywhere. So there are differences between the commercial and a non-commercial realm. But in all cases, only a full-power FM station may have a translator station extend its signal. And now the National Association of Broadcasters is trying to get the FCC to change that. And in fact, the FCC says now that over 500 comments have been received based upon a petition that the National Association of Broadcasters submitted in July 2006. So now the FCC is proposing rules, after reviewing the petition, that would permit the use of FM translators by AM stations and examine the issues related to such a rule change, including the issue of program origination at night over FM translators by AM daytime-only stations. And what that means is a lot of AM stations, because the nature of the AM band changes greatly at night and propagation changes, a lot of AM stations either go off the air in the nighttime, or so they're only allowed to operate during the day, or have to greatly power down during the nighttime so that their signals don't interfere with other stations operating on the same frequency hundreds or miles away. The FCC also says that the AM band's viability is threatened by a well-documented shift of AM listeners to newer mass media services that offer higher technical quality and superior audio fidelity. Now, the FCC has looked at the issue before, but twice rejected proposals to permit AM stations to have FM translator stations. In 1981, the commission rejected a request by the Rocky Mountain Broadcasters Association to amend its rules to permit AM stations to use FM transmitters to retransmit their signals beyond their usual field strength contours, meaning their usual cover area. In 1990, the commission rejected another proposal to allow AM stations to operate FM translators. Although the commission recognized the possibility that permitting AM stations to use FM translators could resolve problems of nighttime reductions in service, the commission was not persuaded that actual improvements in AM service could be gained by allowing FM translators to rebroadcast AM stations. And what's interesting about this to me, even if you've listened to any of the programs where John Anderson, who's done a lot of research on the issue, has been on, is that translators are low-power FM stations, and they are low-power FM stations which are actually permitted to be squeezed on the dial much more close to full-power stations than low-power community stations are allowed to be there. So, in fact, the interesting thing about this proposal is that the NAB is asking the FCC to allow these retransmitting stations on the air in places where a community low-power station is currently not allowed to be. And it's interesting, and it's hard to figure out how the NAB believes that their translator stations rebroadcasting a commercial AM signal would provide less interference than a low-power FM station that originates its own programming from the community. Except for maybe, I guess, the content of the community station may pose a lot of interference to the business as usual on the AM station. It's curious there what they're trying to do. But the FCC says that they received, you know, mostly supportive comments at the 500 that they got so far, and reports that trade associations representing minority broadcasters commented in favor of the NAB petition, including the National Association of Black-Owned Broadcasters and the Minority Media and Telecommunications Council. They filed a joint statement arguing that adopting the proposal would help reverse the sharp downward trend in minority ownership by improving the viability and value of AM stations. Looking underneath the cover of that argument, what you see is that minority ownership has greatly decreased because of industry consolidation, because of the rise of Clear Channel, which bought up stations, pushing out minority owners. And so much of the minority ownership is left with fairly unprofitable and undesirable AM stations, which really kind of need anything they can get to get by. I would argue that giving them FM translators certainly might improve the state or the audience of some minority-owned AM stations, but it's really a Band-Aid on a gushing head wound, where their structural change of trying to allow more minority-owned stations would be far more important than a little tiny breadcrumb thrown their way. Predictably, of course, Prometheus Radio Project, a low-power FM advocates, assert that the proposal to put allow AM station to have translators would have a devastating impact on the development of low-power FM radio service. And, of course, one of the big things to look out for is that these translators could begin taking up slots on the dial that could yet be filled by low-power FM community stations. And it's especially pertinent given that there's a bill in Congress to try and restore and allow these low-power community stations to be placed closer on the dial together, that some of those spots could be preemptively filled in by stations that are merely rebroadcasting AM broadcasters. So really, it almost seems like a preemptive move on the part of the National Association of Broadcasters to keep more community stations from going on the air by arguing that AM stations need now to get coverage on the FM dial. So the FCC will soon be accepting comments on this particular proposal. There will definitely be more at the Media Geek website. The comment date begins 60 days after publication in the Federal Register. So this particular notice of proposed rulemaking came out on August 15th, and the Federal Register probably comes out in the next week or so. So I'll definitely get more about that on MediaGeek.net. MediaGeek.net, if I can pronounce it correctly. It's only my own website. And I'll definitely be providing more coverage of it here on the radio program. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with another half-hour look at independent and grassroots media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. In the meantime, check out the frequently updated Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. The program can also be downloaded at Radio.MediaGeek.net, where you can subscribe to the podcast. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and is heard on 10 other community stations around North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, WYQZ in Warrenton, Bealeton, Virginia, KWMD Kasilov in Anchorage, Alaska, WVEW in Brattleboro, Vermont, and Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington. It's also on the web at Free Radio San Diego, Pirate969.org, and RadioDriftless.org. Media Geek is free to air on your local non-commercial station, too. Just email Paul at MediaGeek.net. That's also where you can send comments about the program, Paul at MediaGeek.net. Thanks for tuning in.